Mayday! Mayday! Any craft in vicinity, please respond!
Beatles, fragging, Giz, get lost! I'm trying to chill out here.
We'd been traveling for hours. Lobo's brain had long since merged with the music coming from his subspace radio, but now his reverie had been rudely disrupted by the urgent request for assistance.
Ignore it. We don't have time for this. Hold your course for Verk.
You cannot do that.
The Martian Manhunter spoke for the first time since they'd left Al's diner, or what was left of it.
Every galactic convention demands that all available craft answer any distress signal. Surely you know...
All right. I don't need a criminal to tell me galactic law. Contact them, Zemtex. Let them know we're coming. Sheesh. I'm never gonna get my cash at this rate.
Our vessel has crashed at coordinates 39 Gamma and 117 Phi. Can you help?
You got any money on board?
No. We're carrying a cargo of pornography and sex aids.
Oh, just my luck.
And a dozen pole dancers.
Pole dancers? Ooh. Well, you tell those dancers not to worry. The main man's on his way to rescue them. What are you waiting for, Zemtex? Get us to those coordinates, you dork brain.
You gotta be joking. Do you know where they are? Those coordinates are for the trash move.
I don't give a flying frag if they're for Sammy the Singing Sewer. Just get us there. Go!
The Trash Moon was a barren satellite that had broken free from its planetary system eons ago. For centuries, it had wandered through space on its own erratic path, weaving its way through other systems. And for centuries, it had been used to dump trash by every planet it passed. Chemicals, debris, plastics, toxins, the rubbish of a dozen worlds. You name it, it got dumped on the Trash Moon. No effort was made to separate and sort the waste. It was dumped as it came. Rotting household refuse all mixed up with mine tailings, poisonous chemicals, and abandoned vehicles. There were even rumors that a complete decommissioned nuclear power station had been thrown out there. But nobody cared enough to look. Everybody knew that sooner or later, the moon's course would steer it away from them, and all that trash would become some other system's problem. When the garbage covered the surface to a depth of 100 feet, somebody had tried to organize things in a more efficient manner. A couple of 100 scavenger robots had been dropped on the moon, programmed to reduce the garbage to its constituent parts for recovery and resale. Then the company filed for bankruptcy, the directors looted the cash accounts and headed for a babe world, and the robots were left to fend for themselves. Now the trash was 500 feet deep, and the scavenger droids were still there, fighting a never-ending battle against the dozen or more ships that arrived every day to disgorge the detritus of their civilizations. The robots also fought constantly against the Pickers, the ragtag collection of aliens who'd settled amongst the trash, hoping to find a better life there than on their homeworlds. The Pickers wanted to preserve everything they could for their own consumption and use, while the robots merely wanted to reduce everything to its components. It wasn't much of a life for either side, but once you were on Trash Moon, there was no way off. John Jones could smell the Trash Moon as soon as the spaz frag hit the atmosphere, long before the bike reached its surface. The stench of decomposing food and dead farm animals, combined with the emanations from disintegrating plastic and thousands of tons of discarded slurry, to produce a stench that overwhelmed the senses. It was the rankest, foulest odor he had ever encountered. The bike swooped down, zeroing in on the coordinates the radio had given them.
Hey, it's a bit iffy, but hey, what's an unnatural odor or two when the lives of bouncing babes is at stake? I just hope they're as grateful as they should be.
The spaz frag hovered over an enormous mass of trash.
This is the spot.
Lobo peered down at the mountains of garbage that rose everywhere.
Yeah. Looks like they must have hit at speed, tunneled down in the crap, and got stuck there. This ain't bike territory. Guess I'll have to go in on foot.
I will assist you.
Oh, yeah? Looking to get your jollies before you hit jail? I don't think so, Baldy. You'll stay right here. This is a main man special solo mission.
20 feet above the surface, Lobo set the bike controls to auto-hover and hit the override switch so Zemtex couldn't make a run for it.
If the bike gets lippy, just ignore it. Alternatively, you might want to torture Zemtex with your telepathic powers. In that case, be my guest.
He clambered to his feet, so he was standing on the bike.
All right, guys, I'll be back shortly. Don't go away now.
Without looking back, he leapt from the bike and plunged down toward the garbage below. John Jones watched as the bounty hunter disappeared headfirst into the festering mounds of rubbish. He'd given Lobo his word he wouldn't escape. Whatever happened, he would keep his promise. The bounty hunter wasn't the only one who prized his honesty. The Martian caught a slight movement off to one side and turned for a better view. A small space pod was slowly approaching. Had Lobo saved the girls? John presumed that pole dancers would be female already. He frowned, puzzled, as the pod drew alongside. This couldn't be the vessel that had crash-landed. It bore no signs of damage at all, and there was no sign of Lobo either. A hatch slid open in the pod's side. A sinister-looking robot stuck its head out.
John Jones?
Yes, but...
Good enough.
Suddenly, there was a pipe gun in its metal hands, the business end pointed directly at John. Before he had time to react, the robot fired. John Jones was enveloped in a thick, choking cloud of gas. He tried his best to keep the substance from entering his lungs, but it was too late. John swayed in his seat, then slumped forward on the pillion, unconscious. In places, the garbage mountains on the moon's surface were 1,000 feet high. When Lobo hit, he plunged straight down through the surface layers and crashed through the roof of a tunnel dug into the trash. Grinning, he got to his feet. He'd quite enjoyed his first ever dive into raw garbage.
So, pole dances, huh?
He was looking forward to this, and no mistake. No doubt, they were in as much of a stinking mess as he was, but so what? Some folks were turned on by the stench of rotting rubbish. Stooping under the low ceiling, Lobo hauled out a small but powerful flashlight from where it dangled on his belt and snapped it on. The high-energy light beams illuminated the tunnel in a cold, white glare. Centuries of trash were arranged in layers, like geological strata, an archaeologist's wet dream. There was a layer of old metal pipes and gaslight fittings, testament to a planet that had just discovered electricity. Above it was a layer of powdered fertilizer, all jumbled up with the decomposing flesh of dead animals, a result of new galactic rules on agricultural policy. Above that, nestling into the tunnel roof, was the skeleton of a 30-foot-long dinosaur.
Wonder where that came from.
The walls and ceiling had been smoothed off, but here and there, trash of all kinds intruded into the tunnel. Obviously, the aliens who lived here had dug it out. Or, as it turned out, not so obviously at all. Hunched over to avoid banging his head on the roof, Lobo headed off down the slope. He turned a corner in the narrow shaft, and it opened out into a larger chamber. His flashlight picked out piles of assorted rubbish. Mounds of damaged circuit boards lay in a heap against one wall. Next to them were stacked thousands of sheets of glass and transparent, corrugated plastic. Recovered wire had been wound onto makeshift bobbins, which hung in their hundreds from the ceiling. In the center of the chamber, staring at the bounty hunter with calculating visual receptors, were half a dozen scavenger droids. The robots were relatively small, only about 5 feet high, but all were fitted with a variety of tools for trash disassembly. Their metal arms ended in hooks and claws and hammers, and wicked-looking curved blades.
Garbage, yes?
The foot-long metal shears that this droid wore in place of a hand started to open and close.
Hey, get a grip. I'm here on a dare and rescue mission. Where did the porno ship come down?
Ambulatory garbage. Humanoid detritus, yes?
The grinding wheel attached to another robot's wrist burst into motion.
Disassembly required.
Then a power drill started up on another droid.
What are you gonna do, guys? Sing me to death with a power tool lullaby?
The robots were all advancing toward him. Lobo's hand closed around the butt of his gun.
Nah.
Then he started to unravel his hook and chain. He could shoot them down in seconds, but where was the fun in that? Better to frag them close up and physical, work up a little sweat, pique his appetite for the pole dancing feast that was to come.
All right, ladies, who's first? Never mind. I'll get to you all eventually.
The hook spun from his hand and arced through the air to embed itself in one of the robot's heads. There was a blue flash of ruptured circuitry. As Lobo jerked the droid off its feet, the other robots charged him, their arm attachments flailing.
Now we're talking!
Nice.
Starboot, Derez, and the psychotic robot stood in the hovering pod's open hatchway, congratulating themselves on a job well done. John Jones lay slumped forward on the spaz frag, KO'd by a massive dose of knockout gas, hands still cuffed behind him. By the time he came around, they'd have picked up the reward and be halfway to another galaxy.
Hey! Nice work, guys!
The voice surprised them, and all three looked blankly around.
Zemtex? Where are you, boss?
Right here, fool!
Where? Aw, jeez, don't tell me Lobo's made you invisible!
The bike, dummy! I'm the stinking bike!
Starboot's mouth fell open.
Huh?
That Lobo cut my brain out. He stuck it in a Spaz Brag's control system.
Jeez, that guy is truly sick. Ain't there a law against doing stuff like that?
Derez squeezed himself past his two companions till he was standing on the edge of the hatch.
Tough luck, boss. But look on the bright side. That's one cool bike he's put you in. The very best that money can buy, according to the ads.
There was a faraway look in the alien's unlidded eyes.
Oh, I've always dreamed of riding a spaz frag.
Hey, boss, how about a ride?
Derez, no!
But the warning came too late. Derez landed hard on the driver's seat. His eyes glazed over, and he fell from the bike, lifelessly tumbling down to land in some hideous mess below. Starboot looked from his dead companion, now sinking slowly into the ooze, to the bike. A sharp metal spike, about 9 inches long, protruded vertically from the seat. It was wet and slick with blood.
Jeez. I tried to tell him. It's an anti-theft device. The seat's tuned to Lobo's butt print. Wrong ass, and you get the spike.
Holy frag! What kind of mind would think of something like that?
No point mulling over spilled milk. A million creds split three ways is better than four.
The robot jerked its head toward the slumped Martian.
Verk wants him. We got him. Let's go.
You two take the pot. If you switch off the override, I can fly this thing on my own. I'll bring the prisoner.
What in the name of Fetal's Giz is this?
Perplexed, Lobo stared at the small black box illuminated by his flash beam. A red LED light was blinking off and on as it broadcast the Mayday signal he had answered. The half-dozen garbage robots lay dismembered and useless 2 levels above where Lobo stood. The battle had lasted mere minutes. Now Lobo was getting really impatient for some hot babe action. But instead of breasts and hips and curvaceous bottoms, his hands were holding a totally unsexy little black box.
Frag, it's a trick. Some lowlife bastard to scam the main man.
Immediately he turned and began to run back up the tunnel, dislodging muck and rubbish at every step. It took several minutes to get back to the surface, clawing his way through clinging, stinking trash. When he finally burst through the top layer of junk, it was to see the spaz frag and a space pod heading rapidly away from him.
That backstabbing bastard Zemtex! I guess Baldy must have helped him by switching off the override. You can't trust nobody these days. Oh well, it's time the bad guys paid the piper. And I got my Martian back.
He jammed the forefinger and thumb of one hand into his mouth. The piercing whistle shattered much of the glass a couple of levels below, but it had another effect too. His bike was fitted with an ultrasonic receptor that allowed him to control it at a distance. It had helped him out 100 times in battle with his enemies. Now, it responded faultlessly.
What the hell?
Zemtex's control of the spaz frag was suddenly gone. It didn't matter what he tried to operate. Nothing was paying any attention to the signals he was frantically sending through the system. He felt the bike slow down slightly, then start to turn toward the pod flying close by its side. The armament's warning lights flashed on. The bike's forward-mounted cannon sent a stream of titanium-tipped shells ripping into the space pod's flank. The Frag's visual sensors picked up the psycho droid, pipe gun in hand, as it leapt through a jagged hole in the pod's hull plates. Then the pod disappeared in an orange-red blossom of flame.
No, no, no!
It was all going wrong. He could only hope that the murderous robot had what it took to defeat Lobo. But he wouldn't have bet on it.
All right.
Lobo watched the space pod's explosion with satisfaction before a disturbing thought occurred to him.
Oh, maybe that was the ship with the pole dancers. Oh, just my fraggin' luck if I've blown up the babes I was supposed to be saving.
Then he saw the plunging robot.
Ooh, if that's one of the dancers, I did myself a favor.
Then he remembered there were no dancers. It was a scam. Two spheres from the pipe gun blasted down at him. He dived full length behind a ragged pile of old aluminum sidings, which sheltered him from the worst of the blasts. The robot landed on top of him, the momentum of its plunge driving them a good 20 feet down into the trash. A mass of slates and old building rubble stopped their fall. Even before Lobo got his breath back, the crazed robot was swinging its gun like a club. The heavy pipe gun battered into the side of Lobo's head. Lobo blocked the swinging gun with his forearm and brought his knees up in the robot's torso. With enough force to send it catapulting forward over him, it dropped the gun as his head rammed into a broken monitor screen. By the time it had disentangled itself and whirled back to its foe, Lobo had the pipe gun in his own hands, leveled at its owner.
You fight like a girl, Robo Dork.
The robot was reduced to pieces of shrapnel. Lobo held up the pipe gun and nodded in admiration.
Nice shooter. Smooth action. And I get the bounty on another bad guy.
The spaz frag swooped down and hovered at his side. Lobo eyed the manhunter, still slumped unconscious against the console.
So this was all your doing then, Zemtex?
There was no reply.
I guess you must be getting to like the shocks. I gotta say, you're a real glutton for punishment.
Lobo tossed the pipe gun into the garbage. See what the scavengers made of that.
Sit up, sleeping beauty.
He shoved the Martian upright and got back on the bike.
You know where you're going, Zemtex, so let's get started.
As the bike rose obediently into the air, Lobo reached toward the electroshock control. Zemtex would still be screaming when they got to Burke.
There is movement through the electromagnetic fields. We sense a presence, possible intruder. Prepare reception on Verk.
As if it were discrete entities, the Alpha conversed with itself. It stood on Verk's highest point, a jagged needle of obsidian rock that jutted a few thousand feet into the planetoid's thin atmosphere. Had it been in the A9 asteroids, the mountain would have been strip-mined. On Verk, it was just a hill that had never been climbed. It was night on the tiny world, but it spun so fast around B-2323 that day and night lasted little more than 4 hours each. The Alpha's massive crystal head was tilted upward, its cold eyes scanning the heavens, reading the data born on the light waves themselves. The artificial intelligence had attuned its quartz body to B-2323's electromagnetic fields, giving it supreme abilities within the star system. As the Imperium of Verk, the Alpha would soon be invading other solar systems. It would master each one's individual EM fields as its sphere of influence increased. It was aware of Lobo's entry into its solar system. It knew that, even now, the bounty hunter was passing Orion. The Verkan troops had razed Orion's every city to the ground, with more than a little help from the Alpha's own destructive capabilities. The Alpha had plans for the planet, and had begun by preparing nurseries for the genetic modification of several thousand Verks. The minor alterations would remove their need for shadow and aversion to bright light. It would be these Verkans' task to rebuild Orion, but to the Alpha's specifications. Weapons factories would proliferate, the fuel for further invasions. Biochemical labs would be required. The more weapons of mass destruction it possessed, the swifter the takeovers would be. Breeding tanks for the clone armies must be constructed and tested. And all of it was already in hand. The rest of the universe would not be pleased when it discovered the Alpha's plans. All life was programmed to survive, either by fighting or fleeing. But the Alpha would exterminate all life. Heavy resistance was only to be expected, and the Alpha was preparing for it in advance. Meanwhile, large numbers of Vurcans were busy on the planetoid itself. Obeying the Alpha's instructions, they burrowed deeper than ever before, almost down to the semi-molten core, forming chambers and tunnels and rooms with strange carved stone equipment. The being that called itself the First was preparing to greet the last.
Got themselves a firestorm, if I'm any judge.
The Spaz Frag was streaking through the upper fringes of Orion's atmosphere, using the planet's spin to slow down and redirect toward Verk. Vast columns of smoke rose from dozens of cities, in flames far below, joining together into one huge plume that had already drifted halfway around the planet. Every now and then, bright gouts of orange flame bloomed and wafted skyward in the smoke. Lobo was tempted to zoom down for a closer look. He liked to watch a good conflagration, and whatever had happened here, it had ignited more than a few of them. But he had a prisoner to deliver, and he'd messed around for long enough already. That stupid stunt on the trash moon had cost him a fair amount of time. The desire for sex he'd felt then had been converted to a desire to cash in his reward and just buy the sex. He wanted to see that money, hold it in his hands, riffle slowly through it, listening to the sweet music of Folding Green. He wanted to kiss it, maybe taunt Jonas Glim by waving fistfuls of cash in his tusky face. He wanted to throw it in the air and roll around naked as it fell on him like snow. Then, he wanted to spend it. Zemtex's brain was a mass of charred nerve endings from the repeated shocks he'd suffered on the last leg of the journey. He was still seething, madder than ever in fact, still vowing to himself that somehow he'd turn the tables on Lobo and leave the bounty hunter sucking vacuum in the cold depths of space. After extensive torture, of course. Very extensive torture, involving a whole range of sharp, serrated, and rough-toothed instruments. And a few blunt ones, too. The only problem was, Semtex wouldn't be able to hold a candy bar, let alone wield a power drill or a bone saw. No limbs, remember? Never mind. He'd figure a way somehow. Maybe he could pay somebody to do it for him. Who knew? Something might come up on this planetoid. Wisely, Zemtex kept his thoughts to himself.
Wakey, wakey, hands off Snakey!
John Jones abruptly recovered consciousness. Lobo had turned around in his seat.
Come on, Baldy, snap out of it, before I come back there and do a little snapping myself.
For a moment, John was baffled. He couldn't have fallen asleep, could he? No. The last thing he remembered was the space pod, and a robot with a pipe gun. Obviously, he had come under some sort of attack, but equally as obvious, Lobo had managed to retrieve the situation. There was an unpleasant taste in John's mouth. He guessed that the robot had used some kind of gas against him.
Will you tell me what happened?
Nope. Only reason I'm waking you up is because I want you compos mentis when I hand you over. It doesn't look good on my resume to bring in a prisoner without his wits about him.
Verk was hovering into view ahead, and John was surprised to see how small the place was. Not even a planetary mass. From the constellations he'd observed on the journey, he guessed they must be somewhere out in the spiral arm. Now the lack of stars suggested one of the Magellanic clouds. He had never been within light years of this part of the galaxy before. How could he possibly have committed a crime here? Clearly, Superman had been right to query the warrant. But had John done the right thing in complying with it?
Sheesh. The place ain't big enough to grow warts on, let alone call itself a fraggin' Imperium. I just hope these geeks got my money, or I'll be sticking their Imperium up their butts and lighting the fuse.
There was little point in further speculation, John decided. The Spaz Frag was slowing as it touched the fringes of the planetoid's atmosphere, the heat from re-entry giving the space bike's force field a fiery orange glow.
Whatever awaits me, I will soon confront it.
There was nothing artificial on the surface of Berg. No cities, not even a village. In fact, there was no construction of any kind. There were only jagged hills and cliffs, and a tall, dark peak that glowered over the others. Water may have been plentiful here in the past, but not now. The steep-sided gorges were filled only with boulders. There was no sign of any life.
If this is some creep's idea of a joke, the main man ain't exactly busting a gut. Wait up. There's something.
The bounty hunter saw a massive entranceway carved into a dark, forbidding cliffside. The bike swooped closer to the entry.
Looks like they're subterraneans, huh?
Cool. It made sense. B-2323 loomed large and close, a huge nuclear furnace. At this distance, its solar radiation was probably lethal if you stayed out in it for too long. Lobo slowed the bike to a fast walking pace and steered toward the foot of the cliff. There was a moment of near darkness as he guided it inside, but the interior was a revelation. Fluorescent fungi grew on the cavern walls in jagged spiral patterns, their eerie light whirling away down a vast corridor cut in the solid rock.
Hootin' heck! I've been in video arcades with less flash than this.
With a distinct lack of caution, he followed the light whirls down the passageway. The way was lined with hundreds of little creatures. Verkans, he presumed, although he was hoping he was wrong. They stood and watched wordlessly as the spaz frag drifted by, their pinched, crabby little faces showing no signs of emotion or intelligence.
Whoever hired me, it wasn't these gunks. They don't look like they got a brain between them. Tell you what, though, they'd sure make good target practice. They're just the right size, and I bet they scamper real fast.
Almost instinctively, his hand went to the blaster that hung from his belt.
Yeah.
He checked the movement, fighting down the impulse. It might not be good protocol to gun them down, especially if it turned out that they had hired him. Maybe after he'd been paid, he could make tentative inquiries about hiring some of them for an hour or so. The tunnel seemed to go on for miles before it eventually widened out into a chamber about 20 feet high and twice as long. Carved stone pillars supported the roof, while a network of openings in the ceiling diverted sunlight from far above to Verk's interior. The sunbeams slanted in at different angles, creating swirling columns of light throughout. It looked like a temple.
Welcome. We are the Alpha, Directorate of the Imperium of Verk.
The Alpha sat on a massive stone throne, whose every surface was grotesquely carved with what looked like electronic circuit boards. The interplay of light and shadow made the being seem impossibly imposing. Its crystal body seemed somehow fluid.
Pleased to meet you, Alf.
Lobo nodded a greeting to the seated crystal figure and dismounted from the bike. He grabbed the Martian's arm roughly and hauled him off, too.
Well, I brung you the geek you've been looking for. Signed, sealed, and delivered, all as per contract. So let's take care of the small matter of finances, okay?
The Alpha appeared not to have heard. It rose from its throne in one swift motion that belied its great bulk. Something that size should have been slow and ponderous, but instead it moved lively and easily. In two paces it was down off the dais and standing beside them. Lobo and the Manhunter were both formidable figures, swathed in muscle, but the Alpha dwarfed them. Sunlight played over its crystal body in an ever-changing kaleidoscope of muted color. Its eyes fixed on the Martian.
You are the last of your race? We wonder why. You seem healthy.
My people...
Not now. We will learn all during the analysis.
Analysis? I am here to stand trial for a crime of which I have no knowledge.
You will learn in due course.
I saved the jawing for later, guys. I got me a hot date with some serious debauchery.
A sudden thought occurred to Lobo, and he looked up at the Alpha. It was disconcerting. Lobo was used to having folks look up at him.
I don't suppose you're offering a little bonus, are you? I mean, seeing as how I brought Baldy in with minimum fuss and maximum efficiency.
Is that customary in the bounty hunting trade?
Oh, yeah, happens all the time. Sometimes guys are so happy they even double the reward money.
He looked expectantly at the Alpha, but the sucker didn't rise to the bait.
What do you wish?
You see these little guys, the gonks out in the tunnel? I got a real hankering to shoot me a couple dozen of them.
Why?
I find them vaguely offensive. Their crabby little faces really get on my nerves.
Apart from that, well, they look like they'd make good targets.
Will 24 do?
If you can spare them.
The Alpha stared. At once, 24 Verkans marched into the chamber in close formation. They wheeled as one and came to a halt facing Lobo.
Aw, come on, Alf. This is a turkey shoot. Make them scamper a bit. Scurry, even. Provide a little entertainment. Everybody likes to see little guys dodging bullets.
No! You cannot do this. It would be cold-blooded murder.
The Manhunter rarely gave in to emotion. He was renowned for being the Justice League's calmest member when under fire. The ancient Martian meditation techniques he employed meant that he was master of his emotions rather than their servant. But a slaughter like the one proposed was more than any decent being could stomach.
Nah, take a powder, you bleeding heart.
Languidly, the bounty hunter fitted a magazine into his blaster's chamber.
You saw how many of them there were. Nobody's gonna miss a few.
John was aware that the Alpha was paying close attention, but it made no move to interfere or even comment.
I said leave them alone.
And who's gonna make me, Baldy? You?
Yes, me. I will not allow you to murder innocent beings.
He concentrated. John's wrists grew translucent, and then immaterial. And the handcuffs fell to the floor.
Oh, neat trick. Can you pull a rabbit out of your butt?
John ignored him and stabbed an accusing finger at the Alpha.
What kind of justice can I expect from you when you allow your own people to be killed without qualm?
They are disposable. Nevertheless, your display of morality interests us. The bounty hunter will not kill the Verkans until we have investigated further.
At some unseen signal from their ruler, the primitive creatures turned and marched in unison from the chamber. As they exited, the last one of them turned. For the briefest of instants, its gaze caught John's. Then, it too fled.
Aw, man! Why'd you let him poop the party, Alf? Like he's the bad guy, remember?
Abruptly, the Alpha turned away. It raised one hand in the air and beckoned for them to follow.
We will show you to your cell, Martian.
John resigned himself. For a moment, fired with adrenaline, ready to do battle with Lobo, he had forgotten why he was here. Now reality came thundering back. He was a prisoner, accused of an unnamed crime.
I demand to know the crime with which I am charged.
You are our legal captive. Under galactic law, you have no rights to make demands.
Hey, about my cash. What say you pay me now? Then you can show him the cell to your Rocky heart's content.
You should come too, bounty hunter. You will appreciate it. Believe us.
Yeah.
Lobo fell into step behind John.
And I'd appreciate you talking in the singular, too. But I ain't making a fuss, right?
We do not understand your point.
Oh, forget it.
Lobo bit the end off a cigar and lit a match. The Alpha peered at him.
What is that?
A cigar. Cheroot, stogie, you know, a smoke.
We do not know.
Oh, it's good for you. Give it a try, why don't you?
Lobo held the cigar out toward the Alpha. John Jones shook his head. The bounty hunter was supposed to have a reputation for honesty, but as far as John could tell, he more or less said whatever he felt like saying. The only consistency in his words and deeds was his unremitting nastiness. The giant crystal being studied the glowing cigar for a moment.
We think not. We are unable to understand the motivation for flooding your breathing apparatus with an unnatural substance.
That's because you've yet to discover the joys of nicotine.
Enough of this nonsense.
John looked up at the Alpha.
Nicotine is an addictive substance. Those who become addicted require constant and increasing doses to feed their habit.
The Alpha peered at Lobo again. Its crystal face was incapable of much expression, but John would have called that look quizzical.
Spoil sport. I wanted to see the rock guy cough.
The Alpha led them into a smaller side tunnel, where the fungi on the walls were sparser and the light slightly dimmer. John noticed that the Alpha didn't have to duck once or lower its head to clear the tunnel roof, as if the tunnel had been cut to this size especially for it. They passed through a pair of massive stone doors, adorned with symbols John had never seen before, into what was obviously the prison complex. It had a long central corridor, with cells running off on either side for its entire, not inconsiderable length. The whole complex was carved out of a huge area of virtually flawless quartz. Despite their thickness, the cell walls were almost transparent. The Alpha paused before an oval opening and indicated that the Manhunter should step through. John hesitated. There was much about the situation that made him unhappy. The unspecified nature of his alleged crime, and the Alpha's willingness to sacrifice the lives of its followers. Allowing himself to be incarcerated now could likely be a mistake. But John lurched forward into the cell as Lobo's boot suddenly hammered into his backside.
Quit messing around! Take it like a man!
John whirled, ready to strike back. It was too late. A sheet of thick, translucent crystal slid out of its base and into place, covering the oval opening. John could only glower his displeasure, watching the faintly blurred images of Lobo and the Alpha through the crystal.
So, what have you got to interest me, Alf? Torture equipment, maybe? Not babes, by any chance.
No, it is this.
The Alpha indicated the cell directly opposite John's. Its oval covering was already in place. Lobo could see the shape of someone inside, and he squinted for a better view. A generally nondescript bipedal humanoid was sitting on a stone bench, head in hands, sobbing like his heart would break.
Yeah, cool. I like to see prisoners, but he's kind of small scale, ain't he? I mean, if you had 1,000 of them, that'd be a spectacle. Synchronized sobbing. Yeah, you could make money out of that.
He is an Aurium.
Well, bully for him, Alf. Get to the point, huh?
Aurium is the only planet in the B2323 system.
The place I saw burning on the way in? Man, somebody made a real mess out of them.
We did.
Congratulations, I'd pat you on the back if you wasn't so damn big.
That is the last Aurium. The very last Aurium. The others are extinct.
Don't tell me you did that too.
A cold feeling was growing in Lobo's gut, a niggling, chilly little itch that often accompanied trouble. A sudden thought had occurred to him. His hand moved imperceptibly toward his gun.
Don't tell me something else. The Martian's the last of his kind too, right?
You are very astute.
Yeah, I'm a regular genius. More to the point, I'm also the last Zarnian. Yep, that's right. I'm the only survivor of the entire advanced Zarnian civilization. Now, bearing in mind you asked specifically for me, you ain't gonna tell me that's coincidence.
We are not going to tell you anything.
Lobo reached up with one hand and stroked the stubble on his chin.
I guess there's no money either, huh?
That is correct. You are our prisoner. Why do you stroke your chin? Does this signify thoughtfulness?
Well, Rockbutt, I guess you could call it a distraction.
Fireburst shell slammed into the Alpha's chest. Taken unaware, the crystal being was blasted back and off its feet. It crunched into the chamber wall.
Guys who try to welch on me?
Lobo aimed the gun dead center in the Alpha's forehead.
They don't live very long.
The Alpha rocked backward on its heels, but recovered at once. Before Lobo's finger could tighten on the trigger again, the Alpha's eyes flashed bright as a beacon. What felt like a wall of force drove into Lobo, hurling the gun from his grasp. It skidded away across the polished stone floor. Lobo felt himself lifted off his feet, turned around, and smashed face first into a stone column covered in phosphorescent lichen. His face scraped through the lichen and across the polished stone, and a bitter taste mingled with the saltiness of his own blood. Instinctively, Lobo flung himself aside. The Alpha's huge stone fist glanced off his ribs and smacked into the column. As crystal struck crystal, piezoelectricity flashed. Tiny globules of sparkling blue light shot off in all directions. The bounty hunter's boot swung up and drove into the crystal giant's knee joint. The Alpha fell backward, its arms flailing as it strove to keep its balance.
Didn't like that, did you, Al? Pucker up, Cheesewick. There's more on the way.
Lobo followed through with a two-footed dropkick, slamming into the Alpha's chest, sending it thundering into a cell wall. Lobo rolled to his feet as another shower of blue sparks blossomed like fireworks. Lobo could hardly take his eyes off them, watching even as the sparks lost energy and faded gently into nothing. His eyes blinked rapidly. He wasn't feeling good at all. Something wasn't right with his perceptions. The Alpha moved more swiftly than a creature its size had any right to, launching itself across the prison corridor.
Why is the Easter Bunny charging at me? Who painted it psychedelic colors? And why does my arm weigh several million tons? Drugged. The bastard drugged me with that lichen.
The realization and the Alpha hit him together. Lobo felt his whole body squashing like toothpaste as the behemoth sandwiched him against a wall. He tried to make a quip, but he didn't seem to have any breath. The Alpha's hands were gripping his throat.
We expected resistance.
The Alpha seemed unfazed by the shells that had exploded against it and the blows Lobo had landed. Relentlessly, its grip tightened. It yanked Lobo off the floor and lifted him until he was level with its face.
We crush resistance.
About 90% of Lobo's brain was engaged in lewd and libidinous sexual practices with every babe he'd ever met, and several he hadn't. Fortunately, the remaining 10% focused on self-preservation.
Crush this, Rocky.
Lobo marveled as the words came out of his mouth in multicolored bubbles. But one hand came up, clutching a brace of frag grenades that he'd yanked from his belt. The Alpha was fast, but not fast enough. Before it could close its mouth, Lobo stuffed the grenades down its throat. The Alpha held him away at arm's length, his kicking feet dangling 12 inches above the ground, while it stood there waiting. It didn't have to wait long. A gout of flame erupted from the Alpha's mouth and ears, followed by a puff of acrid gray smoke. More smoke puffed from its mouth.
You are... what was I gonna say? Oh, yeah! Toast!
The Alpha swayed on its feet, its eyes flashing in a random sequence.
I like toast.
We are the Alpha. We are not amused.
Oh, frag me.
The thing must have the constitution of a mountain. Lobo had to figure a way out of this before that massive rock fist pounded his head. He didn't figure it. The massive fist pounded.
We are not amused. We are not amused. We are not amused.
Eventually, all the pretty flashing lights disappeared, and Lobo fell into a bottomless void. The Spazfrag stood in the empty throne room while Xemtex tried to make up his mind what to do. He'd heard the battle between the Alpha and Lobo. That thing must be pretty good to take out a psycho like the Bow. It wouldn't make sense for a Xemtex to rile it. Especially not when Xemtex himself was, in a way, the last of his kind. He was the last of the exploding men, the last of the bike brains. If that Alpha was a collector, he might just want Xemtex for the display case too. No, better if he just kept his electronic mouth shut, bide his time, wait and see what happened. Not that there was anything else he could do with that override switch in place. There was no bounty now, and that was a shame, but at least Lobo was getting what he deserved. With a little luck, the big stone guy would torture him to death, then maybe put him in a blender for a while, before shooting him into the heart of the sun. If Xemtex still had a heart, it would have been racing like a trip hammer. Left alone in his translucent walled cell, John Jones's stomach lurched as he realized the truth behind this whole affair. Last Sons. Although he had no view of Lobo and the Alpha, he had heard their raised voices, followed shortly by the sounds of an extreme fight. Whatever Lobo was receiving, it wasn't a million credits. The sounds of battle had culminated in an explosion of noise, followed by a deep silence. Since there was no joyous cursing or vulgar boasting, John could only assume that Lobo had been defeated, and was now the Alpha's prisoner too.
It has all been a trap, and my own devotion to the law blinded me to being set up.
Although he'd spent the past 2 decades fighting crime, both on Earth and extraterrestrially, He had originally come from a peace-loving race. Violent aggression of any kind had been unknown to Martians. Their deep grasp of logic meant that they knew full well how inefficient and wasteful battle always is, both in terms of lives and resources. Therefore, they never indulged in it. John had heard it argued on Earth that it is war that propels progress. But it seemed to him, at least, that argument usually came from employees of the cynical military-industrial complex. In his heart of hearts, John truly could not understand why any being would want to use physical force to impose its will on others. Unless, of course, those others were criminal. But failure to understand and acceptance of his unjust imprisonment were two entirely different matters. John pulled himself up to his full height and considered the walls of his jail. Crystal rock, cut and polished so expertly that it seemed more like glass. Surely his great strength would prove more than enough to break his way free. He clenched one fist and drew it back, preparing to unleash all the might he could muster. Even before the pile driver punch landed, John knew that his solution was not going to work. As his fist drove at speed toward the wall, he was astonished to see tiny lines of flame flickering inside the crystal itself. John was unable to stay his blow, and a gout of flame erupted from the wall, enveloping the Martian's hand and wrist, sending him flying back. Pain seared up his arm, and a terrible weakness engulfed him. He slumped against the cell's far wall, cradling his arm, gritting his teeth against the pain that swept through him. The situation was worse, far worse than he had even suspected. All along, the Manhunter had been concerned that the Vurcan Imperium had known his adopted Earth identity. How? It was a closely guarded secret among members of the Justice League. But the Alpha also knew that John Jones was vulnerable to naked flame, and it had constructed this cell especially to contain him. It was safe to conclude that all walls in the cell were similarly booby-trapped. How had it learned these things? Why did the Alpha want him enough to issue a false warrant? Why did it want Lobo too, and the Orion he had heard it mention? What possible reason could there be for holding the three of them captive, apart from the fact that they were the last surviving members of their respective species? As the waves of pain subsided somewhat, John began to focus his mind. A natural telepath, he had spent years honing and perfecting this skill. Under normal conditions, he would never think of entering anybody else's mind uninvited. Such an intrusion on personal privacy was anathema to him. But conditions now were anything but normal. He needed to contact Lobo, with or without the bounty hunter's permission. His mind reached out, tentatively trying to reach the Zarnian.
Lobo.
Nothing. He tried again, desperately attempting to attune himself to the bounty hunter's thoughts.
Lobo.
Nothing. Lobo must be unconscious, or worse.
Lobo.
John sat with his back to the crystal wall, his thoughts racing. There had to be a reasonable explanation for all of this, but no matter how he harried at it, he always ended up with more questions than there seemed to be answers.
Oh, mama. Who put the lights out?
Lobo came to and looked around him. For a moment, he thought he was in a dance club. Tiny points of light danced before his eyes, his head was thumping, and there was a rotten taste in his mouth, like he'd been dining on the trash moon. His vision eventually returned to normal, and he could take in his surroundings. He was in a cell. There was nothing new in that, of course. He was used to overnights for a drunken disorderly. This, however, was a crystal cell, and he was in it, courtesy of that big crystal bastard.
Damned hallucinogenic fungi. I'd have beaten the creep easy if it hadn't warped my friggin' brain.
If there was one thing Lobo hated more than anything else, it was a liar. Actually, depending on his mood, Lobo had a long list of things he hated more than anything else.
Oh, you're toast, Alpha. You just don't know it yet. But when the bow gets out of here, look out, dude. I'll crush you into friggin' gravel and use you for road fill.
As his anger started to mount, Lobo paced around the cell, examining the transparent walls and door. He had a real talent for precisely pinning down the weak spot in any opponent or situation. A talent that had often come in useful.
The door. It has to contain a locking mechanism, and that's where I'll start.
He could see that his chain and hook were lying outside in the corridor, presumably removed by the Alpha. His gun was out there, too. He checked his belt, gratified to see that the Alpha had left that in place. Four frag grenades still hung there, and the big knife was still in the sheath strapped to his leg. But he figured that main strength would suffice. As his fist connected with a crystal, jagged blue streaks of lightning ripped from the wall and into his body. He fell to the floor, writhing and squirming and twitching uncontrollably as the electricity disrupted, overloaded, and damn near burned out his muscles.
Oh, sheesh. Now I know how that bastard Zemtex must feel.
Whew. Zemtex? The thought brought him up short. The bike was still there, and the throne room where he'd left it. Even from this distance, it would pick up the ultrasonic whistle and come rushing to the rescue. It had more than enough built-in firepower to take the prison to pieces. But suppose the Alpha was in the throne room too. That crystal geek was a lot more powerful than Lobo had first assumed. The Alpha could probably tear the bike to pieces. It was a chance that Lobo would have to risk. He raised his fingers to his lips. More streaks of lightning leapt from the cell wall. His fingers sizzled, and his mouth felt like he just swallowed a taser dishing out in the region of a million volts.
Feels case! That bastard just got all the angles covered.
Lobo glared balefully at the cell door. Maybe if he made one supreme effort, charged it, and hit it with all his strength, he could withstand the cranked-up voltage long enough to break free.
Lobo?
Lobo's scalp tingled suddenly. He glanced around the cell, seeking the source of the voice. Through the dense crystal wall, he could make out the Martian a few cells away.
Yo, Baldy!
It is better not to talk. We may be under surveillance. I am contacting you telepathically.
You bastard! I don't let nobody inside my head!
Lobo slammed the side of his hand against his skull.
Out! Now!
I do this only from necessity. In case it has not occurred to you, I should point out we are both on the same side now. We must aid each other to escape.
Oh, yeah? After all the trouble I took to bring you here, now you want me to spring you?
I am innocent, remember?
Yeah, me too. And broke as well. That's what hurts the most. Getting cheated out of my cash.
Perhaps if we act together, we will succeed.
What? Team up with a superhero? Oh, man, don't ask me to do this.
He shook his head in bewilderment, as if the thought of working with a hero was akin to shaving with a blowtorch after lathering with sulfuric acid.
Listen, I never team up with nobody, except sometimes Jonas Glim. And Jonas is a bigger bastard than I am.
The Alpha is powerful. If we act in unison, we may defeat it.
The Fragger only beat me because he dipped me in some kind of fungus crap.
Lobo reached into his jacket pocket and pulled out a battered cigar. He struck a match against his nail and lit up.
Tell you what. You do your thing, I'll do mine. I've been in worse situations than this. Now get lost. I want to savor my stogie. Then I'll figure what to do.
Smoking is not good for you.
I know, Baldy. That's why I do it. Save the health lectures for somebody who cares. Now, are you going to get out of my head of your own free will? Or would you prefer me to start thinking about some real nasty things? Like I remember one time when I was trapped in a morgue with...
Ronmir, think on what I have said.
Yeah, sure. And you let me know if you recall any other places that might have a million cred bounty on your head. I got a serious cash flow problem to rectify.
On the surface, high above the subterranean prison, the Alpha stood with arms outstretched, its head thrown back as it scanned the starry heavens above. Flickering starlight played over its body. A thousand pinpricks of light swirled and danced in its crystalline structure. Data flowed into its inhuman mind as it read the features of the electromagnetic spectrum. 20 million miles away, Orion orbited. It was on the far side of the sun now, but the distance between planet and planetoid would only be half that by this time tomorrow. From beneath its feet, the rock creature could feel thousands of tiny vibrations. Its Vurcan engineers were busy implementing its instructions, hollowing out untouched parts of the interior. Deep in the bowels of the planetoid, strange constructions were underway.
Vurk is near impregnable. With our improvements, it will become the new center of the universe. Our universe.
Way out on the fringes of the system, a meteor swarm streaked. B-2323's gravity would gradually draw it closer before catapulting it back into the depths of space. The Alpha relaxed. It rose into the air, flight being merely one of the powers the artificial intelligence had given its new body. It headed slowly toward the carved entranceway through which Lobo and his captive had entered earlier. All was well with the Alpha's world. Way out in space, the meteor swarm rolled and tumbled along. There were 40 or 50 rocks in the group, the smallest the size of a football, the largest almost as big as a 40-foot truck. Flying behind one of the larger boulders, matching his speed with the streaking swarm, was a stern red and blue figure, shielded by the meteor from any scanners that might be turned his way. Superman was taking his suspicions seriously. Something exceptionally strange was going on in this small system, and he had determined to find out what. In his lifetime on Earth, he had made many friends. John Jones was one of his oldest and most respected friends, and Superman's loyalty to him would never waver.
Funny, it was in a meteor storm that I first came to Earth, all those years ago.
Not long after his father sent him away from their dying planet, Krypton was destroyed by a series of cataclysmic explosions. Debris from the shattered world was hurled far out into space, and it was this flotsam and jetsam that had surrounded the tiny craft. Unknown to the child within, the meteors would accompany him on his long journey to a new world. And then they would rain down on the Midwestern town of Smallville, bringing death and destruction that would change everything forever. Superman shook the memories away.
The past is another country. There's no sense going back.
The swarm was arcing in past the larger planet, Orion, though Superman had no knowledge of its name. This isolated part of the galaxy was new to him. Constellations and star systems that he couldn't name. Only his innate sense of direction prevented him from deviating from his course. Even from his great distance, the Man of Steel could see the plumes of smoke that more or less circled the planet. Some terrible disaster must have struck. Superman's mind was made up in an instant. His entire life had been devoted to helping the helpless, mostly on his adopted homeworld Earth, but he couldn't turn a blind eye to anybody anywhere who needed aid. If it meant exposing himself to possible scrutiny, blowing the secret his arrival was supposed to be, then so be it. He would deal with any ramifications when the time came. He peeled away from his rocky shield, increasing his speed as he shot toward the planet like a stone from a sling. Seconds later, he was skimming the upper atmosphere. The air was thick with dust and soot particles. His invulnerable body glowed red hot from friction with the air as he dived quickly below the acrid smoke, and he caught his first view of the surface.
Great Ral.
It was a scene of total devastation. From his vantage point a quarter mile high, he could see half a dozen cities. They lay in ruins, with vast fires burning on their outskirts. Mystified, Superman flew lower.
What could have caused destruction on this scale, and yet been so specific?
The vast tracts of forested land that stretched between the cities was untouched. Only the conurbations themselves had been attacked. A sudden stench assailed his nostrils, revolting him. He knew only too well the sickly, cloying odor of burning flesh. Immediately below him, a vast number of humanoid bodies had been piled up, doused in fuel, and torched. There must have been tens of thousands of corpses in that conflagration alone, and a dozen similar bonfires burned around the city. It took a while for his telescopic vision to search the surface of the planet, scouring the rubble, but there were no survivors. A surge of anger swept through him. For a world to be devastated on this scale was a crime almost beyond imagining. With troubled heart and churning mind, Superman shot skyward again. mystery upon mystery. By the time he had caught up with the meteors, his hot anger had turned to an icy calm. He had a lot of questions to ask, and he'd make sure the Directorate of the Imperium of Verk gave him his answers. John's internal clock told him he had been in custody for 22 Earth hours. Several times he had attacked the walls of his cell, intent on smashing his way to freedom. Each time, instantaneous flame had driven him back. Assaulting the floor and the ceiling brought the same painful result. He felt weak and drained, feelings that under normal circumstances rarely troubled the Martian Manhunter. He'd concluded that, despite their transparent appearance, the walls must be embedded with a network of electronic circuits. Quartz crystal was renowned for its piezoelectric qualities, so the rock probably acted as its own circuit board. It was programmed to react to his movements, and obviously its reactions were as fast as his own. But what if it couldn't see him? John Jones possessed the startling ability to refract the light rays around himself, rendering him invisible to the naked eye. He tried it now, ready to deliver his most potent blow to the cell door, and was rewarded by a blast of fire that seared along his arm. He clutched at his wrist, cradling it against his body to ease the raging pain.
It is a startling piece of engineering, but what else might it be programmed to do?
He tried to phase through the crystal wall, and was rewarded with a burst of flame. He cupped his face in his hands and waited for the pain to subside. Just who in the name of his ancestors was this Alpha, who had captured two of the most powerful beings in existence? John's brain ached from his efforts to provide a satisfactory solution, and his arm was throbbing from its numerous brushes with the flames. He sat down with his back against one wall and let himself drift off into much-needed sleep. In his dream, he was soaring over the red planet. The air was chill, but he rejoiced in the feel of it against his skin. It was the Martian summer, and he was young and bursting with the joy of life. Below him, neat fields marched in serried ranks into the distance, reaching almost as far as the slopes of mighty Olympus Mons. The crops his people grew had been tailored especially for their arid environment. It was a miracle that anything at all grew in the thin red soil that had barely known rainfall for thousands of years. John smiled to himself, retreating into a reverie, a dream within a dream. Once, when he was younger, he'd asked his grandfather why there was so little of the most precious liquid on Mars. The old man had knitted his great craggy brows, as if digging deep in his memory for an answer.
This is just a story, John. But stories rival water as a people's major possession. If the people forget their stories, their imaginations shrivel. When the imagination shrivels, hope withers and dies. Finally, the people themselves will die.
The old man pulled his thick cape closer around him.
Many years ago, when Mars was warmer, life was easy here. The people had much water, streams and rivers and lakes so great you could not see the other side.
Young John had marveled at the old man's words. Water was the Martian's obsession. They arose before dawn and gathered the thin dew that condensed during the long dark nights on rocks and hardy desert plants. They invented water traps that could squeeze what few molecules of water there were out of the air itself. It was hard to imagine a time when water was so ubiquitous you could bathe in it, or swim in it, or sail a boat on it for days on end.
But where did it go, Grandfather? Where did the water go?
The old man's eyes were rheumy under his brows.
As our planet cooled down, so its electromagnetic field faded. Our gravity became less, giving us more power, but robbing us of our most valuable possession.
His grandfather turned his hands palm up and extended his arms upward.
The water rose in the air and drifted off into space. And do you know where it fell? This cloud of moisture that once had wet all Mars? Do you know the blue world? The one that twinkles close at night?
I know it.
Yes.
All of our water fell there and made it a blue world with green land. And we became the red planet with deserts and choking sandstorms. I don't know if it's true, but that's the story I heard from my grandfather, and he heard from his before him. And nobody I know has a better theory.
Many years later, after John had been teleported to the Blue World, he heard the stories about the Great Flood that had devastated Earth millennia in the past. Cultures from all over the world had myths detailing the incessant rain and the few survivors as their lands drowned. The Sumerians told tales of Utnapishtim and his family. The Hebrews remembered Noah and his ark. Every race, from Polynesian islanders to Siberian nomads, had a flood myth. Humans had come up with many explanations for the sudden inundation, from their god's wrath through sunspots and melting glaciers to a planetary superstorm. But John couldn't help wondering if maybe somehow, incredibly, an old man's tale to a young boy had actually been true. He'd loved his grandfather and spent long hours with the old man, absorbing all his wisdom. He was old and frail by the time John married, but he led the speeches and danced with the bride at John's wedding. When John's son was born a year later, the old man broke open a bottle of dew water he'd literally spent years collecting. They toasted the baby's health with water. When the old man finally died, it was in the knowledge that his line would go on and the stories would continue to be told. Although, as things worked out, the line did not go on, and the stories were not told.
He puts much store in the telling of tales. His emotions intrigue us. What is this, love? Emotion is irrelevant, a needless component of organic life, but we can harness emotion. We can use it against our enemies. All life is our enemy.
A pale sun hung in the red sky. In his dream, John saw people crowd the fields beneath him. They were looking up, waving to him. He made to wave back, then realized that greeting was not their intention at all. He angled to the side and swooped down closer. He could see that all was far from well. The people were clutching each other as if desperate for support. Several had fallen to the ground, their faces and exposed skin swelling with ugly purple bruises.
Plague!
John sped away, his heart hammering, panic coursing through him as he flew toward his own dwelling. His wife stood framed in the open doorway, holding the limp body of their beloved son. Both mother and child were covered in the purple bruises. Some of them burst and weeping a milky liquid on their skin. Tears ran unchecked down her beautiful, ravaged face. His heart numb with terror, John raced toward them and disappeared in a blinding flash of rainbow color.
Plague. We are attracted to this idea of disease and emotion.
The dream changed again. He was full grown, a man now. He wore a green cape over his costume and fought shoulder to shoulder with the champions of Earth, the fabled Justice League of America. His companions were living gods and goddesses. Once every year, as regular as clockwork, John left his companions and went on a solitary pilgrimage. Once every year, he went home and stood on the sands of a dead world. The fields were long gone, turned to desert by years of neglect, swiftly eroded by the scouring, dust-laden winds that sometimes enveloped the whole planet. Not a house or building of any kind still stood. Here and there, a skull with overarching brow stared up mockingly at the red planet's last sun. The dust beneath his feet was the bones of his people, a billion of them, perhaps more, victims of a plague that poisoned their blood and ruptured their skin and liquefied their innards. John Jones was alone, the last Martian ever. He fell to his knees and covered his face with his hands.
There are many beings with so-called superpowers, heroes. This is the time of the Alpha. There will be no more heroes.